Lionsgate Films, a Lionsgate Entertainment Company. Lionsgate Films presents. A Drop of Red Liquid Falls, an Edward R. Pressman production. In association with Muse Productions and Christian Halsey Solomon. More Red Drops Fall. A Mary Herron film. Several more drops of red fall and splatter across a white background. American Psycho, with narrative description by Audiovision Canada. A stream of red liquid dribbles across the white background. Christian Bale. A chef's knife slices into a piece of meat. Willem Dafoe. Raspberries fall past the white background to rest beside a partridge breast and the raspberry coulis on a white china plate. Jared Leto. A waiter places the partridge entree in front of a woman diner. Josh Lucas. Samantha Mathis. A bouquet of roses provides the centerpiece for an elegantly laid table. Matt Ross. Bill Sage. Artfully arranged Nouvelle Cuisine entrees grace the diner's plates. Chloe Sevigny. Kara Seymour. Justin Theroux. One diner smokes a cigarette during dessert. Guinevere Turner.
Squid ravioli in a lemongrass broth. With goat cheese for fritterolles, and I also have an arugula Caesar salad. For entrees this evening, I have swordfish meatloaf with onion marmalade, rare roasted partridge breast in raspberry coulis with a sorrel timbale,
and grilled free-range rabbit with herb french fries. Our pasta tonight is a squid ravioli and a lemon breast.
Casting by Billy Hopkins, Suzanne Smith, and Carrie Barden.
With a double espresso.
God, I hate this place. The Chick's restaurant.
Why aren't we doors yet?
Because Bateman won't give the maitre d' head.
Bateman flicks a swizzle stick at his associate.
Is that Reed Robinson over there?
He's freebasing or what? That's not Robinson.
Well, who is it then?
It's Paul Allen.
It's not Paul Allen. Paul Allen's on the other side of the room over there.
Who's he with?
Weasel from Kicker Peabody.
They don't have a good bathroom to do coke in.
Are you sure that's Paul Allen over there?
Yes, McDougas, I am.
He's handling the Fisher account.
Lucky bastard.
Lucky Jew bastard.
Jesus, McDermott, what does that have to do with anything?
I've seen that bastard sitting in his office, talking on the phone to the CEO, spinning a fucking menorah.
Not a menorah. You spin a dreidel.
Oh, my God, Bateman. You want me to fry you up some fucking potato pancakes? Some latkes?
No, just cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks.
Oh, I forgot. Bateman's dating someone from the ACLU.
A waiter brings the check.
Boy next door. Speaking of reasonable, only $570.
The four men all put down their platinum credit cards.
A little something for the purse.
Later, one of the men slips a $50 bill to the transsexual doorman of a nightclub, who allows them past the velvet rope. Executive producers Michael Pasiornek, Jeff Sackman, Joseph Drake. Produced by Edward R. Pressman, Chris Hanley, Christian Halsey Solomon. In the club, three women with guns pose on stage as Charlie's Angels, and Bateman and his friends join the dancers. Based on the novel by Bret Easton Ellis. Charlie's Angels sweep their guns across the crowd on the dance floor. Screenplay by Mary Herron and Guinevere Turner. At the bar, Bateman offers liquor tickets.
He's only on the rocks.
He's not good anymore. It's a cash bar. $25.
Bateman pays the bartender, who turns away.
You're a fucking ugly bitch. I want to stab you to death, then play around with your blood.
The bartender pours Bateman two shots of Stoli and places them on the bar. Then she hands him his change, and Bateman smiles at her. Directed by Mary Herron. The next day, sunlight pours through balcony doors into an austere, luxurious apartment. The floors are polished maple, the walls and ceiling a stark white. The living room is furnished with a modern white sofa, a glass coffee table, and black leather chairs. In the bedroom, a white duvet is thrown back, and the bed is empty. A man walks into the bathroom wearing only jockey shorts.
I live in the American Gardens building on West 81st Street, on the 11th floor.
He stands at the toilet.
My name is Patrick Bateman. I'm 27 years old. I believe in taking care of myself, in a balanced diet, in a rigorous exercise routine. In the morning, if my face is a little puffy, I'll put on an ice pack while doing my stomach crunches. I can do 1,000 now.
In the living room, Patrick does yoga stretches while wearing his ice pack facial mask. In the shower, he rinses off his lean, well-muscled body.
After I remove the ice pack, I use a deep pore cleanser lotion. In the shower, I use a water-activated gel cleanser. Then a honey almond body scrub. And on the face, an exfoliating gel scrub.
Later, Patrick smears a clear liquid on his face as he stands in front of the bathroom mirror.
Then I apply an herb mint facial mask, which I leave on for 10 minutes while I prepare the rest of my routine. I always use an aftershave lotion with little or no alcohol, because alcohol dries your face out and makes you look older. Then moisturizer, then an anti-aging eye balm, followed by a final moisturizing protective lotion. There is an idea of a Patrick Bateman, some kind of abstraction. But there is no real me, only an entity, something illusory. And though I can hide my cold gaze, and you can shake my hand and feel flesh gripping yours, and maybe you can even sense our lifestyles are probably comparable, I simply am not there.
Patrick peels off the herbal mask and gazes at himself in the mirror. The glass and steel towers of Manhattan gleam in the sunlight. Up in a black office tower, Patrick strides along a hallway wearing earphones with his overcoat and suit.
Morning, Alan. Nice cat.
Patrick walks into his corner office.
Aerobics class, sorry. Any messages?
Ricky Harrison has to cancel. He didn't say what he was canceling or why.
Occasionally box with Ricky at the Harvard Club. Anyone else?
Spencer wants to meet for drinks at Flutie's Pier 17.
When?
After six?
Negative. Cancel it.
And what should I say?
Just say no.
Just say no?
Okay, Gene. I need reservations for 3 at Camel's at 12:30, and if not there, try Crayons, all right?
Sir?
Oh, wait. And I need reservations for 2 at Arcadia at 8 o'clock on Thursday.
Something romantic?
No. Silly. Forget it. I'll make them.
No, I'll do it.
No, no. Be a doll and just get me a mineral water, okay?
You look nice today.
Don't wear that outfit again.
What? I didn't hear you.
I said, do not wear that outfit again. Wear a dress, a skirt, or something.
Well, you don't like this, I take it.
Come on. You're prettier than that.
Thanks, Patrick.
I'm not here. And high heels. I like high heels.
Jean, a pretty blonde, leaves in her pantsuit. Patrick puts his feet up on his uncluttered desk and picks up a TV remote.
Feathered friends for 600.
During courtship, the male frigate bird inflates to enormous size the red pouch found here.
That night, a yellow cab takes the Battery Park exit off the freeway into Chinatown. Shops and restaurants line the sidewalks of the narrow streets. Inside the cab.
Thousands of roses. And lots of chocolate truffles. Godiva. And oysters on the half shell.
I'm trying to listen to the new Robert Palmer tape, but Evelyn, my supposed fiance, keeps buzzing in my ear.
Conifers. Any Leibovitz. We'll get any Leibovitz. And we'll have to get someone to videotape. Patrick, we should do it.
Do what?
Get married, have a wedding.
No, I can't take the time off work.
Your father practically owns the company. You can do anything you like, silly.
I don't want to talk about it.
I hate that job anyway. I see why you just don't quit.
Because I want to fit
in.
Patrick glares at Evelyn for emphasis, then puts his earphones back on. A few minutes later, Patrick and Evelyn enter a restaurant called Espace.
Where are you going to party?
I'm on the verge of tears by the time we arrive at Espace, since I'm positive we won't have a decent table. But we do. And relief washes over me in an awesome way.
Patrick, this is my cousin Vanden and her boyfriend Stash. Would you mind? They're both artists.
Mendy's in Braille.
I see you've met everyone.
You look awesome.
One of their friends welcomes Evelyn with a kiss as Patrick looks over the engraved aluminum menu. Later.
I'm fairly certain that Timothy Bryce and Evelyn are having an affair. Timothy is the only interesting person I know. I'm almost completely indifferent as to whether Evelyn knows I'm having an affair with Courtney Rawlinson, her closest friend. Courtney is almost perfect looking. She's usually operating on one or more psychiatric drugs. Tonight, I believe it's Xanax. More disturbing than her drug use, though, is the fact that she's engaged to Lewis Carruthers, the biggest doofus in the business.
Tell me, Stash. Do you think Soho is becoming too commercial?
Yes, I read that.
Oh, who gives a rat's ass?
Hey, that affects us.
Oh, well, what about the massacres in Sri Lanka, honey? Doesn't that affect us too? I mean, do you know anything about Sri Lanka? How, like, the Sikhs are killing, like, tons of Israelis over there?
Come on, Bryce. There are a lot more important problems than Sri Lanka to worry about.
Like what?
Well, we have to end apartheid, for one, and slow down the nuclear arms race, stop terrorism and world hunger. We have to provide food and shelter for the homeless and oppose racial discrimination and promote civil rights while also promoting equal rights for women. We have to encourage a return to traditional moral values. Most importantly, we have to promote general social concern and less materialism in young people.
Bryce chokes on his drink.
Patrick, how thought-provoking.
Patrick acknowledges Lewis's compliment with a nod. Later, Patrick withdraws a thick wad of cash from a sidewalk bank machine and stuffs it into his billfold. A well-dressed woman walks by, and Patrick turns at the sound of her heels. He walks after her, the picture of elegance in his double-breasted suit and calf-length overcoat. Catches up to her at the corner as they wait for the traffic light to change. Patrick stares openly at the woman.
Hello?
Hello.
She looks away, and Patrick takes his eyes off her. She turns to look him over, sizing him up. The light changes, and they enter the crosswalk side by side. The next day at a dry cleaner's.
Bleaching? Jinko, are you trying to say bleaching? Bleaching?
Jinko,
oh my God.
Jinko.
Two things. One, you can't bleach a cherubi. Out of the question.
Two, his sheets are stained red.
These are very expensive sheets, and I really need to clean them.
If you don't shut your fucking mouth, I will kill you.
Now listen, I have a lunch meeting at Hubert's in 20 minutes with Ronald Harrison, and I need those sheets cleaned by this afternoon. Listen, I cannot understand you. This is crazy. You're a fool. I can't cope with this. Stupid bitchy! Understand?
Patrick? Hi, Patrick. I thought that was you.
Hello. This is...
Isn't it ridiculous coming all the way up here? But they really are the best.
Then why can't they get these stains out? I mean, can you talk to these people or something? I'm not getting anywhere.
Oh, what are those?
Oh, well, it's cranberry juice, cranapple.
Really?
Listen, if you could talk to them, I would really appreciate it. I'm really late. I have a lunch appointment at Hubert's in 15 minutes.
Hubert's? That moved uptown, right?
Well, oh boy, listen, I've got to go. Thank you, Victoria.
Maybe we could do lunch one day next week. You know, I'm downtown on Wall Street quite often.
I don't know, Victoria. I'm at work all the time.
Well, what about a Saturday?
Next Saturday?
Sure.
Can't, I'm afraid. I'm at Naveley Miz. Listen, I've really got to go. I'll call you.
Okay. Sue.
Later.
Listen, you're dating Lewis. He's in Arizona. You're fucking me, and we haven't made plans. What could you possibly be up to tonight?
Stop it. I'm...
A lot of lithium?
Waiting for Lewis to call me. He said he'd call tonight.
Pumpkin? Pumpkin, you're dating an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Pumpkin, you're dating the biggest dickweed in New York.
Pumpkin, you're dating a tumbling dickweed.
Patrick, stop calling me pumpkin, okay? I have to go.
Courtney! Dinner.
I can't.
I'm thinking Dorsia.
Dorsia's nice.
Or something fabulous.
As Patrick flips through his Zagat's restaurant guide, a porno video plays on his TV.
Dorsia.
Yes. I know it's a little late, but is it possible to reserve a table for 2 at 8 or 8:30, perhaps?
Later, in a cab.
Facial at Elizabeth Arden, which was really relaxing. And then to the Pottery Barn, where I got this little silver muffin dish.
Is that Donald Trump's car?
God, Patrick, shut up.
You know, Courtney, you should take some more lithium or have a Diet Coke. Some caffeine might get you out of this slump.
I just want a child. Just two perfect children.
In the restaurant, Patrick pulls Courtney upright in her chair.
Are we here?
Yeah.
He drops her napkin in her lap and walks around the table to sit opposite her.
This is Dorsia?
Good evening.
Yes, dear.
The menu says Barcadia.
You're going to have the peanut butter soup with smoked duck and mashed squash. New York Matinee called it a playful but mysterious little dish. You'll love it. And then the red snapper with violets and pine nuts. I think that'll follow nicely.
Thanks, Patrick.
Courtney's eyes are closed as she slumps low in her chair. A few days later at the office.
Patrick, thanks so much for looking after Courtney. Dorsia, how impressive. How on earth did you get a reservation there?
Lucky, I guess.
That's a wonderful suit.
Don't tell me. Let me guess. Valentino Couture.
Uh-huh.
You look so soft.
Your compliment was sufficient, Louis. Hello, Halber Stram.
Nice tie.
How the hell are you?
Alan has mistaken me for this dickhead, Marcus Halber Stram. It seems logical because Marcus also works at PNP and in fact does the same exact thing I do. He also has a penchant for Valentino's suits and Oliver People's glasses. Marcus and I even go to the same barber, although I have a slightly better haircut.
So how's the ransom account going, Marcus?
It's all right.
Really? That's interesting. It's not great.
Oh, well, you know.
So how's Cecilia? She's a great girl.
Oh, yeah. I'm very lucky.
Hey, Alan. Congratulations on the Fisher account.
Thank you, Baxter.
Listen, Paul. Squash.
Paul opens a silver card case and hands his business card to Bryce.
Call me.
What, Friday?
No can do. I got an 8:30 res at Dorsia.
Great. Sea urchin ceviche.
Dorsia on Friday night. How'd he swing that?
I think he's lying.
Patrick takes out his silver card case and flips it open.
Is that a gram?
New card. What do you think?
Patrick slides it across the conference room table.
Oh, very nice. Look at that.
Picked them up from the printers yesterday.
Good coloring.
That's bone. And the lettering is something called Cillian Braille.
It's very cool, Bateman, but that's nothing. Look at this.
That is really nice.
Eggshell with Romalian type. What do you think?
Nice. Jesus. That is really super. How'd a nitwit like you get so tasteful?
I can't believe that Bryce prefers Van Patten's card to mine.
But wait. You ain't seen nothing.
Bryce pulls out his card case.
Raised lettering. Pale nimbus. White.
Impressive. Very nice.
All three are vice presidents at Pierce & Pierce.
Let's see Paul Allen's card.
Bryce and Van Patten pick up their cards and put them away. Bryce takes Paul's card from his pocket and looks at it. Then somberly offers it to Patrick. Paul, too, is a vice president.
Look at that subtle off-white coloring. The tasteful thickness of it. Oh, my God. It even has a watermark.
Patrick's hand trembles as he scrutinizes the card, then drops it.
Something wrong, Patrick? You're sweating.
Patrick's fist is clenched as he stares at Paul's card. That night, Patrick passes the statue of George Washington outside Federal Hall as he leaves Wall Street, his briefcase in his hand. In a narrow lane, garbage bags and dumpsters clutter the sidewalks. Patrick glances down at a homeless man sitting on the sidewalk and stops. He walks back to the man and the small dog beside him.
Hello. Pat Bateman. You want some, money? Some food?
Patrick opens his billfold.
This what you need?
I'm hungry.
Yeah. Cold out too, isn't it?
Patrick glances along the lane, then crouches in front of the man.
Why don't you get a job? If you're so hungry, why don't you get a job?
I lost my job.
Why? You drinking? Is that why you lost it? Insider trading? Just joking. Listen, what's your name?
Al.
Speak up, come on.
Al.
Get a goddamn job, Al. You got a negative attitude. That's what's stopping you. You gotta get your act together. I'll help you.
You are so kind, mister. You're kind. You're a kind man.
It's okay.
I can tell. Please, you gotta tell me what to do. You gotta help me. I'm so cold. I'm hungry.
You know how bad you smell? You reek of shit. Do you know that? Al. I'm sorry. It's just shit. I don't know.
Patrick stands up.
I don't have anything in common with you.
As he puts his billfold away, he looks up and down the lane. Patrick crouches in front of Al again and opens his briefcase.
Oh, thank you, mister. Thank you. Are you all right? I'm cold out here. It's...
What a fucking loser you are.
What?
Patrick plunges a knife into Al repeatedly and shoves him over. Standing up, he stomps on Al's little dog. Patrick puts the knife back in his briefcase as he picks it up and walks away, his coattails flapping behind him. The next day, a woman's hands massage Patrick's face.
What beautiful skin you have, Mr. Bateman. So fine. So smooth.
Patrick lies beneath a towel on a massage table at a spa. Later, he gets a manicure.
I have all the characteristics of a human being. Flesh, blood, skin, hair. But not a single clear, identifiable emotion, except for greed and disgust. Something horrible is happening inside of me, and I don't know why. My nightly bloodlust has overflowed into my days. I feel lethal, on the verge of frenzy. I think my mask of sanity is about to slip.
At a Christmas party, a waiter dressed as an elf walks among the guests, serving flutes of champagne from a silver tray.
Hey, McCloy, what do you say?
Hey, Hamilton, have a holly jolly Christmas. Is Alan still handling the Fisher account?
Of course, who else?
Mistletoe alert! Merry Xmas, Patrick. Merry Xmas, Harry.
Merry Christmas.
You're late, honey.
Evelyn carries a small pet.
I've been here the entire time. You just didn't see me.
Say hello to Snowball. Snowball says, Merry Christmas, Patrick.
What is it?
It's a little baby piggy wiggy, isn't it? It's a Vietnamese pot-bellied pig. My darling pets. Don't you?
Someone has stuck reindeer antlers on Patrick's head.
Stop scowling, Patrick. You're such a Grinch. But what does Mr. Grinch want for Christmas? And don't say breast implants again.
Patrick walks away from Evelyn.
Alan!
Marcus! Merry Christmas, how you been?
Workaholic, I suppose? Haven't seen you in a while.
Hey, Hamilton! We're going to Nell's. Limo's out front.
We should have dinner.
Maybe you could bring,
Cecilia?
Yes, Cecilia.
Oh, Cecilia would adore it.
Well, then let's do it, Marcus.
Great party.
Thanks. Patrick, why is he calling you Marcus?
Mistletoe alert.
Patrick waves a sprig of mistletoe and plants his lips on Evelyn's. Several days later, at a restaurant...
Marcus Halberstram for 2 at 7.
The hostess leads Patrick inside to a table with Paul.
I came here for the cilantro crawfish gumbo, all right? Which is, after all, the only excuse one can have for being in this restaurant, which is, by the way, almost completely empty.
I'm very sorry, sir.
J&B straight and a Corona.
Would you like to hear the...
Double absolute martini.
Yes, sir. Would you like to hear the specials?
Not if you want to keep your spleen.
This is a real beehive of activity, Halberstram. This place is hot. Very hot.
Listen, the mud soup and charcoal arugula are outrageous here.
Yeah, well, you're late.
Hey, I'm a child of divorce. Give me a break. I see they've omitted the pork loin with lime jello.
We should have gone to Dorcia. I could have gotten us a table.
Nobody goes there anymore.
Glancing across the room, Patrick does a double take.
Is that Ivana Trump? Jeez, Patrick. I mean, Marcus, what are you thinking? Why would Ivana be at Texarkana? So, wasn't Rothschild originally handling the Fisher account? How'd you get it?
Well, I could tell you that, Halberstram. But then I'd have to kill you.
Later, over dinner.
I like to dissect girls. Did you know I'm utterly insane?
Great tan, Marcus. I mean, really impressive. Where do you tan?
Salon.
I've got a tanning bed at home. You should look into it. And, Cecilia. How is she? Where is she tonight?
Cecilia's, well, you know Cecilia. I think she's having dinner with, Evelyn Williams.
Evelyn? Great ass. Goes out with that loser Patrick Bateman. What a dork.
Another martini, Paul.
At Patrick's, Paul slumps drunkenly on a chair draped with a sheet. Newspaper has been taped to the floor around it.
You like Huey Lewis in the news?
They're okay.
Their early work was a little too new wave for my taste. But when Sports came out in 83, I think they really came into their own, commercially and artistically.
Patrick walks briskly into the bathroom.
The whole album has a clear, crisp sound. And a new sheen of consummate professionalism that really gives the songs a big boost.
Patrick puts on a plastic raincoat and swallows a prescription pill. In the hall, he picks up an axe and backs into the living room.
He's been compared to Elvis Costello, but I think Huey has a far more bitter, cynical sense of humor.
He sets the axe down.
Hey, Halberstram.
Yes, Alan?
Why are there copies of the Styles section all over the place? Do you have a dog? A little chow or something?
No, Helen.
Is that a raincoat?
Yes, it is. In 87, Huey released this. Four, their most accomplished album. I think their undisputed masterpiece is Hip to Be Square. A song so catchy, most people probably don't listen to the lyrics.
But he gets the axe.
Because it's not just about the pleasures of conformity and the importance of trends. It's also a personal statement about the band itself. Hey, Paul!
The axe bites into Paul's skull, spraying Patrick as Paul keels over, gushing blood. Patrick savages the body with the axe. His frenzy over, Patrick drops the axe. It's hip to be square. Patrick removes the splattered raincoat that has left his shirt and suit immaculate, but his face covered in blood. He steps over Paul's body and sits down, facing it. He brushes his hair back off his forehead. Patrick puts a cigar in his mouth and reaches into a pocket for his lighter. Exhaling cigar smoke, he leans back on the sofa to contemplate his handiwork. Later, Patrick drags a large garment bag across the lobby of his apartment building, leaving a trail of blood behind him. The security guard looks up briefly as Patrick steps outside and hails a cab.
Is that you're completely naked and he was standing up on the table and your choke pulls out?
A couple passes as the cab pulls to the curb.
Patrick? Patrick! Is that you?
No, Lewis. It's not me. You're mistaken.
This is my very good friend, Patrick Bateman.
Where are you going?
We're going to Nell's. Gwendolyn's father is buying it.
Patrick heaves the garment bag into the trunk of the cab.
Where did you get that overnight bag?
Patrick closes the trunk.
Jean-Paul Gaultier.
Later, a light burns in a window high in an apartment building. Upstairs, Patrick enters the apartment.
When I get to Paul Allen's place, I use the keys I took from his pocket before disposing of the body. There is a moment of sheer panic when I realize that Paul's apartment overlooks the park and is obviously more expensive than mine. I calm myself and move into the bedroom where I find his suitcase and start to pack. It's time for Paul to take a little trip.
Patrick packs one of Paul's suits.
Dallas, Paris, Singapore.
He grabs underwear and shirts from the bureau and throws them into the suitcase, too. Then he rushes out of the bedroom. In the living room, he changes the greeting on Paul's answering machine.
Hi, this is Paul. Been called away to London for a few days. Meredith, I'll call you when I get back. Hasta la vista, baby.
Patrick picks up Paul's suitcase and switches off the lights. He hurries out of the apartment. Lady in red. Several days later, Patrick sits behind his desk, his eyes closed, listening to Chris de Burgh on his headphones. There's nobody here. Gene enters his office.
What is it?
Patrick.
Yes, Gene.
There's Mr. Donald Kimball here to see you.
Who?
Detective Donald Kimball.
Patrick removes his headset.
Tell him I'm at lunch.
Patrick, it's only 10:30. I think he knows you're here.
Send him in, I guess.
As Gene walks out, Patrick picks up his phone.
Now, John, you've got to wear clothes in proportion to your physique. There are definite do's and don'ts, good buddy.
Gene shows Detective Kimball in.
Old striped shirt calls for a solid
Patrick
collar,
waves Kimball to a chair.
Discreetly patterned suits and ties. Yes, always tip the stylist 15%. Listen, John, I've got to go. T. Boone Pickens just walked in. Just joking. No, don't tip the owner of the salon. Okay, John, right? Got it. Sorry about that.
No, I'm sorry. I should have made an appointment. Was that anything important?
All that? Just mulling over business problems, examining opportunities, exchanging rumors, spreading gossip.
Hi. I'm Donald Kimball.
They shake hands.
Hi. Pat Bateman. Nice to meet you.
Sorry to barge in on you like this. I know how busy you guys can get.
Patrick sweeps his magazines and Walkman into a drawer.
What's the topic of discussion?
I've been hired by Meredith Powell to investigate the disappearance of Paul Allen.
I see, yeah. Paul's disappearance, yeah.
Sir, it's nothing that official. I just have some basic questions about Paul Allen, about yourself.
Coffee?
No, I'm okay.
Paul and ours?
No, I'm okay.
Patrick reaches for the intercom.
Can you bring Mr.
Kimball.
Mr. Kimball, a bottle of
no,
Apollo...
No, really, I'm okay.
It's no problem. So, what's the topic of discussion?
The disappearance of Paul Allen.
Gene brings in the mineral water.
Well,
Patrick hastily slips a coaster under the glass.
I haven't heard anything about the disappearance or anything. Not on page 6, at least.
I think his family wants this kept quiet.
Understandable. Lime?
No, really, I'm okay.
You sure? I can always get you a lime.
Just some preliminary questions that I need for my own files, okay?
Shoot.
How old are you?
27.
Where did you go to school?
Harvard, then Harvard Business School.
Your address?
The American Gardens Building, West 81st Street.
Nice, very nice.
Thanks.
What can you tell me about Paul Allen?
I'm at a loss. He was part of that whole Yale thing.
Yale thing?
Yeah, Yale thing.
What do you mean, Yale thing?
Well, I think, for one, that he was probably a closet homosexual who did a lot of cocaine at Yale thing.
What kind of man was he, besides the information you've just given?
I hope I'm not being cross-examined here.
Do you feel like that?
No, not really.
Where did Paul hang out?
Hang out?
Yeah, you know, hang out.
Let me think. The Newport, Harry's, Flutie's,
Indochine, Nell's, the Cornell Club, the New York Yacht Club.
He had a yacht?
No, he just hung out there.
And where did he go to school?
Don't you know this?
I just wanted to know if you know.
Before Yale, if I remember correctly, St. Paul's. Listen, I just want to help.
I understand.
Do you have any witnesses or fingerprints?
Well, there's a message on his answering machine that says he went to London. Well,
maybe he did, huh?
His girlfriend doesn't think so.
But has anyone seen him in London?
Actually, yes. But I've had a hard time getting actual verification. A Stephen Hughes said he saw him at a restaurant there, but I checked it out, and what happened is he mistook a Herbert Ainsworth for Paulson.
Had his apartment been burglarized?
No, actually, it hadn't. Toiletries were missing, a suit was gone, so was some luggage, that's it.
I mean, no one's dealing with the homicide squad yet or anything, right?
No, not yet. As I said, we're not sure. Basically, no one's seen or heard anything.
So typical, isn't it?
It's just strange. One day someone's walking around, going to work, alive, and then...
Nothing.
People just disappear.
The earth just opens up and swallows them.
Eerie. Really eerie.
Patrick raises his eyebrows in agreement. He glances at his watch.
Listen, you'll have to excuse me. I have a lunch meeting with Cliff Huxtable at Four Seasons in 20 minutes.
The Four Seasons? Isn't that a little far uptown? I mean, aren't you going to be late?
No, there's one down here.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
It's very good.
Listen, if anything else occurs to you, any information...
Absolutely, I'm 100% with you.
Great. And thanks for your time, Mr. Bateman.
Patrick shows Kimball out.
Bye-bye.
Patrick leans against the door. A plate of figs, kiwi slices, and red currants sits beside a glass of sparkling mineral water. In his living room, Patrick performs a series of extreme abdominal crunches as the Texas Chainsaw Massacre plays on his TV. Afterward, Patrick skips rope as sunlight streams through his vertical blinds. One night, a young blonde woman stands alone on a corner in a rundown part of the city. A limousine cruises slowly along the street, and the young hooker steps to the curb to meet it.
I haven't seen you around here.
You just haven't been looking.
You'd like to see my apartment?
I'm not supposed to.
Patrick shows her some money.
Do you want to come to my apartment or not?
She glances along the street.
I'm not supposed to, but I can make an exception.
She plucks the money from Patrick's fingers.
Did you take a credit card?
She wrinkles her nose.
I'm joking. Come on, get in.
The hooker gets into the back seat beside Patrick, who's wearing a tux. A few minutes later, he's on a cell phone.
Like a girl, early 20s, blonde, who does couples. Couples. Now, I really can't stress blonde enough. Blonde. I'm Paul. My name's Paul Allen. You got that? You're Christy. You're to respond only to Christy. Is that clear?
Christy smiles. Later, at his apartment, Patrick pours bath oil into a tub of water. He sits on the edge of the tub in his tux, while Christy drinks a glass of white wine in the bath.
It's a very fine Chardonnay you're drinking. I want you to clean your vagina.
Setting the wine glass down, Christy slides to one end of the tub and reaches for a sponge.
No. I'm behind. Get on your knees. You have a very nice body. Thank you. Send her up. Woman, you got yours too. Christy, get out and dry off. Choose a robe. not the Bichon. And come and meet me and our guest in the living room for drinks.
As Patrick walks out, Christy picks up her glass of Chardonnay.
You've arrived. How lovely. Let me take your coat. I'm Paul. How good of you to come.
The call girl wears a bolero jacket over a black sequin dress.
Not quite blonde, are you? More dirty blonde. I'm gonna call you Sabrina. I'm Paul Allen.
In the living room, Sabrina sits down on the white sofa. Christy emerges from the bathroom in a smart black and white striped robe. Patrick brings Sabrina a glass of wine. As Christy joins her on the sofa, Patrick sits down in one of his black leather chairs.
So, don't you want to know what I do?
Christy glances at Sabrina.
No. No, not really.
Well, I work on Wall Street. At Pearson Pierce. Have you heard of it?
Sabrina shakes her head. Patrick's smile fades.
You have a really nice place here, Paul. How much did you pay for it?
Well, actually, that's none of your business, Christy. But I can assure you, it certainly wasn't cheap. No. No smoking, not in here. Farta truffle?
Sabrina puts her cigarette away.
I don't want you to get drunk, but, that's a very fine Chardonnay. You're not drinking.
Patrick walks over to his stereo and picks up a CD case. You know I love you,
but I just can't tell. Do you like Phil Collins? I've been a big Genesis fan ever since the release of their 1980 album, Duke. Before that, I really didn't understand any of their work. It was too artsy, too intellectual. It was on Duke where, Phil Collins' presence became more apparent. I think Invisible Touch is the group's undisputed masterpiece.
Patrick beckons the women to join him in the bedroom.
It's an epic meditation on intangibility.
Patrick sits on the edge of the bed.
At the same time, it deepens and enriches the meaning of the preceding three albums.
The women join him on the bed.
Christy, take off the robe. Listen to the brilliant ensemble playing of Banks, Collins, and Rutherford.
He sets up a video camera.
You can practically hear every nuance of every instrument. Sabrina, remove your dress. In terms of lyrical craftsmanship, sheer songwriting, this album hits a new peak of professionalism. Sabrina, why don't you dance a little? Take the lyrics to Land of Confusion. In this song, Phil Collins addresses the problems of abusive political authority.
Sabrina gyrates in her black thong and bra.
In Too Deep is the most moving pop song of the 1980s about monogamy and commitment. The song is extremely uplifting. Their lyrics are as positive and affirmative as anything I've heard in rock.
Patrick trains his tripod-mounted camera on the bed and peers through the viewfinder.
Christy, get down on your knees so Sabrina can see your asshole. Phil Collins' solo career seems to be more commercial and therefore more satisfying in a narrower way. Especially songs like In the Air Tonight and Against All Odds. Sabrina, don't just stare at it, eat it. But I also think Phil Collins works best within the confines of the group than as a solo artist. And I stress the word, artist.
Out in the living room, Patrick adjusts the stereo.
This is Susudio. A great, great song. Personal favorite.
Patrick undresses as he returns to the bedroom. Minutes later, the threesome has formed a daisy chain on the bed. Patrick admires himself in the mirror as he thrusts into Sabrina from behind. Patrick's video camera records the scene for his collection. Later, the two women give Patrick oral sex. The trio rearranges itself, and Patrick re-enters Sabrina. Watching himself in the mirror, Patrick flexes his biceps, and Christy looks on, bored. Patrick braces Sabrina's ankles on his shoulders as he pumps away and winks at himself in the mirror. Christy waves to the camera in long white gloves. Taking Sabrina from behind, Patrick grabs her hair and turns her face to the camera. Later, as they sleep beneath the duvet, Christy's hand flops over onto Patrick's wrist and he shrugs it off.
Don't touch the watch.
Patrick sits up and gets out of the bed. Patrick opens a drawer containing scissors, probes, and knives, and picks up a wire coat hanger.
Can we go now?
We're not through yet.
Later, as Patrick shows the women to the door, there are angry welts on Sabrina's shoulders. She's unsteady on her feet and bleeding from the nose as Patrick counts out some bills and pays her off. Christy rips her money from Patrick's hand and hurries into the hall after Sabrina. Later, in a bar...
If they have a good personality and they're not great-looking, then who fucking cares?
Well, let's just say hypothetically, okay? What if they have a good personality? I know. There are no girls with good personalities.
Good personality consists of a chick with a little hard body who will satisfy all sexual demands without being too slutty about things and who will essentially keep her dumb fucking mouth shut.
The only girls with good personalities who are smart or maybe funny or halfway intelligent or talented, though God knows what the fuck that means, are ugly chicks.
Absolutely.
And this is because they have to make up for how fucking unattractive they are.
Do you know what Ed Gein said about women?
Ed Gein, maitre d' at Canal Bar?
No. Serial killer, Wisconsin in the 50s.
What did Ed say?
He said, when I see a pretty girl walking down the street, I think two things. One part of me wants to take her out and talk to her, be real nice and sweet and treat her right.
And what'd the other part of him think?
What her head would look like on a stick.
Patrick's laughter makes Van Patten uneasy.
Hi, guys.
It's Lewis.
I want to get your opinion on something. It's my business card. I decided to get a new one, too.
Lewis shakes a card out of his brass card case.
Oh, that's
very nice, Lewis.
Thank you.
Lewis swings around to show the card to Patrick. Contemplating the crisp, clean design of Lewis's card, Patrick swallows hard. Wearing a satisfied smile, Lewis walks away. Then glances back at Patrick.
Listen, what about dinner?
Is that all you ever have to contribute, Van Patten? What about fucking dinner?
Cheer up there, Bateman. What's the matter? No shiatsu this morning?
Touching me like that and draw back a stump.
Hey, hold on there, little buddy.
Excuse me.
Patrick gets up and leaves the table. As he walks into the men's room, Patrick pulls on his black leather gloves with cold determination in his eyes. Flexes his fingers as he walks up behind Lewis, who is standing at a urinal. Patrick's arms tremble as his hands slowly encircle Lewis's neck. Lewis spins around, with Patrick's fingers at his throat. Lewis pushes Patrick's sleeve up to bare his arm, then kisses his wrist.
God, Patrick, why here? I've seen you looking at me. I've noticed... your hot body. Don't be shy. You can't imagine how long I've wanted this ever since that Christmas party at Arizona 206. You know, the one you were wearing?
Patrick walks away from Lewis.
Easily on money tight.
At the sink, he scrubs his gloved hands.
I want you. I want you too. Patrick!
What is it?
Where are you going?
I've got to return some videotape.
Patrick leaves the men's room. Coming down the stairs into the bar, he bumps into a patron, then into a waiter.
Patrick!
Patrick stops and looks up to the mezzanine, where Lewis mouths the words, "I'll call you." Turning on his heel, Patrick strides out of the bar. The next day, the office towers of Manhattan stand out against a cloudless blue sky. Pierce, Patrick walks briskly along the hall toward his office. Patrick slows as he spots a man leaning over Gene's desk.
Any Paul Allen?
Reservation? No. Reservation, but
Kimball,
he doesn't.
I've been wanting to talk with you. Come into my office. Gene, great jacket. Matsuda.
Do you remember where you were the night of Paul's disappearance, which was on the 20th of December?
God. I guess I was probably returning videotapes.
Patrick consults his daybook.
I had a date with a girl named Veronica.
That's not what I've got.
What?
That's not the information I've received.
Well, I wait. What information have you received?
Let me see.
Kimball flips through his notebook.
You were with...
Well, I could be wrong.
When was the last time you were with Paul Allen?
We'd gone to a new musical called... Oh, Africa, Brave Africa. It was a laugh riot. That was about it. I think we had dinner at Orso's. Orso's. I hope I've been informative. Long day. Bit scattered.
I'm a little spent now, too. But how about lunch in a week or so when I've sorted out all this information?
Great. Yes, I'd like that.
And if you could try and pin down where you were the night of Paul Allen's disappearance, it would make my job a lot easier.
Absolutely. I'm with you on that one.
Kimball reaches into his briefcase.
Huey Lewis in the news.
Patrick stares soberly at the CD.
Great stuff. I just bought it on my way here. You heard it?
Never. I mean, I don't really like singers.
Not a big music fan, huh?
No, I like music. Just their... Huey's too black sounding for me.
Teach his own. So, lunch next week?
I'll be there.
Kimball departs, but his visit leaves Patrick concerned. Later, Patrick has sex with Courtney at her place. He collapses on her, still wearing his shirt and pants. Propped up on one arm, he flops onto his back beside her. Reaching beneath his shoulders, he pulls out his stuffed toy cat and passes it to Courtney. Getting off the bed, Patrick pulls up his pants.
Will you call me before Easter?
Maybe.
He stands in front of the mirror, buttoning his shirt.
What are you doing tonight?
Dinner at a river cafe. Old bar afterwards, maybe.
That's nice.
Never knew you smoked.
You never noticed. Listen... Patrick, can we talk?
Patrick frowns.
You look marvelous. There's nothing to say. You're gonna marry Lewis.
Isn't that special? Patrick.
He turns to her.
Yes, Courtney.
If I don't see you before Easter, have a nice one, okay?
You too.
Patrick adjusts his tie in the mirror, picks up his jacket, and leaves the bedroom.
Patrick?
Yeah?
Nothing.
One night at a club, the dancers crowd the floor in front of the stage. Two androgynous young men wearing angel wings perform on stilts among the dancers. A waiter carries a tray of drinks through the crowd. From the stage, models prance onto a catwalk that thrusts out into the crowd.
There is this theory now that if you can catch the AIDS virus through having sex with someone who's infected, then you can catch anything. Alzheimer's.
Patrons line up outside a row of cubicles at one side of the club.
Dyslexia.
I'm not sure, guy, but I don't think dyslexia is a virus.
But who knows? They don't know that. Prove it.
Patrick steps into one of the cubicles, and Bryce follows him in. Bryce does a line of coke.
Oh, God.
What?
It's a
fucking milligram of sweetener. I want to get high off this baby and not sprinkle it on my fucking oatmeal.
It's definitely weak, but I have a feeling if we do enough of it, we'll be okay.
Could you keep it down? I'm trying to do drugs. Fuck you!
Calm down. Let's do it anyway.
That's right. That isn't the faggot in the next
stall thinks it's okay!
Fuck you!
Hey, fuck you!
Sorry, dude. Steroids.
Okay, let's do it.
Later, a bare-chested man in bunny ears dances in the middle of the crowd. Up on the mezzanine overlooking the dance floor, patrons stand chatting and watching the dancers below. At one table...
Where did Craig go?
Well, Gorbachev is downstairs. McDermott went to sign a peace treaty between the United States and Russia. He's the one behind Glasnost.
He said he was in mergers and acquisitions.
You're not confused, are you?
No, not really.
Gorbachev is not downstairs.
Karen's right. Gorbachev's not downstairs. He's a tunnel. Ask me a question.
So what do you do?
I'm into, murders and executions mostly.
Do you like it?
Well, it depends. Why?
Well, most guys I know who work in mergers and acquisitions really don't like it.
Patrick nods at the pretty blonde.
So, where do you work out?
Later, outside.
Think I'm dumb, don't you? You think I'm dumb, you think all models are dumb.
No, I really don't.
That's okay, I don't mind. There's something sweet about you.
The blonde touches Patrick's arm. She gets into the back seat of a cab, and Patrick slides in after her. The next day, Patrick sits in his office, fingering a lock of blonde hair. He tucks the lock of hair into his shirt pocket as Jean steps in. She finds him sitting on the sofa in the corner.
Doing the crossword?
Patrick is filling in all the blanks with the words meat, bone, and bones.
Need any help?
Patrick's sunglasses reflect the crossword. Jean places a file on Patrick's desk and starts to walk out.
Jean?
Yes, Patrick?
Would you like to accompany me to dinner? That is, if you're not doing anything.
No, I don't have any plans.
Well.
Patrick puts aside the newspaper and crosses his legs.
Isn't this a coincidence? Listen, where should we go?
Anywhere you want.
Let's not think about what I want. How about anywhere you want?
I don't know, Patrick. I can't make this decision.
Come on. Where do you want to go? Anywhere you want. Just say it. I can get us in anywhere.
What about... Dorcia?
Patrick looks up at her and nods slowly.
So, Dorcia is where Jean wants to go.
Oh, I don't know. No, we'll go in wherever you want to go.
Dorcia is fine.
Dorcia, yes?
Yeah, can you take two tonight at, well, let's say 9 o'clock?
Oh, we're totally booked.
Really? That's great.
No, I said we are totally booked.
2 at 9? Perfect. See you then. Yeah? You're dressed okay?
You didn't give a name.
They know me. Why don't you meet me at my place at 7 for drinks?
Jean grins.
And Jean? We'll want to change before we go out.
Jean's smile fades as she backs out of Patrick's office. That evening at Patrick's, she wears a strapless sheath.
Patrick, it's so elegant. What a wonderful view.
Patrick has a woman's head on a shelf in his freezer.
Sorbet?
Thanks, Patrick. I'd love some.
Patrick brings the carton of sorbet to her in the living room.
Do you want a bite?
I'm on a diet, but thank you.
No need to lose any weight. You're kidding, right? You look great. Very fit.
You can always be thinner. Look better.
Well, maybe we shouldn't go out to dinner. I don't want to ruin your willpower.
That's all right. I'm not very good at controlling it anyway.
Patrick walks back into the kitchen.
So listen. What do you really want to do with your life? Just briefly, summarize. And don't tell me you enjoy working with children, okay?
Well, I'd like to travel and maybe go back to school, but I don't really know. I'm at a point in my life where there seems to be so many possibilities. But I'm just so unsure.
Patrick tears himself away from a set of high-end meat cleavers.
Do you have a boyfriend?
No, not really.
Interesting.
Are you seeing anyone? I mean, seriously?
Maybe. I don't know. Not really.
Jean takes a bite of sorbet.
Jean? Do you feel fulfilled? I mean, in your life?
I guess I do. For a long time, I was too focused on my work. But now I've really begun to think about changing myself, you know, developing and growing.
Growing. I'm glad you said that.
Patrick takes a roll of duct tape out of a cupboard.
Did you know that Ted Bundy's first dog, a collie, was named Lassie? Had you heard this?
Who's Ted Bundy?
Forget it.
His smile fades, and Patrick returns to the cupboard.
What's that?
Duct tape. I need it for, taping something.
Patrick? Have you ever wanted to make someone happy?
What? No, put it in the carton.
Jean nearly put her spoon on the coffee table.
Sorry.
Jean?
Patrick closes the cupboard door.
What?
Make someone happy. Have you ever wanted to?
Patrick holds something behind him as he walks around the back of the sofa.
Looking for,
He aims a nail gun at the back of Jean's skull.
I guess you could say I just want to have a meaningful relationship with someone special.
Jean smiles.
Hmm.
Patrick's finger tightens on the trigger. He looks over at the phone.
Patrick. Patrick. I know you're there. Pick up the phone, you bad boy. What are you up to tonight?
Patrick puts the nail gun down behind the sofa.
I hope you're not out there with some little number you picked up because you're my Mr. Bateman. My boy next door. Anyway, you never called me and you said you would. And I'll leave a message for Jean about this too to remind you, but we're having dinner with Melania and Taylor. You know Melania, she went to Sweetbriar. And we're meeting at the Cornell Club, so I'll call you tomorrow morning, honey. Oh, sorry, I know you hate that. Bye, Patrick. Bye, Mr. Big Time CEO. Bye-bye.
Patrick sits on one of his leather chairs with a sour expression.
Was that Evelyn?
Jean glances at him.
Are you still seeing her?
Patrick meets Jean's gaze with cold eyes.
I'm sorry. I have no right to ask that. Do you want me to go?
I don't think I can control myself.
I know I should go. I know I have a tendency to get involved with unavailable men. And, I mean, do you want me to go?
I think if you stay, something bad will happen. I think I might hurt you. You don't want to get hurt, do you?
No, I guess not. I don't want to get bruised. You're right. I should go.
Jean stands up.
Oh, don't forget you have a lunch date tomorrow with Donald Kimball at Smith & Walensky's.
Thanks. Slipped my mind completely.
At Smith and Walensky's the next day, a waiter serves lunch to two men. At the other side of the restaurant, a waiter serves Donald Kimball and Patrick, then walks away.
So, the night he disappeared, any new thoughts about what you did?
Not sure. I had a shower and some sorbet.
I think you're getting your dates mixed up.
But how? Where do you place Paul that night?
According to his date book, and this was verified by his secretary, he had dinner with Marcus Halberstam.
And?
I questioned him.
Marcus?
Yes, and he denies it, though at first he couldn't be sure.
But he denied it?
Yes.
Well, does Marcus have an alibi?
Yes.
He does, you're sure?
I checked it out. It's clean.
Patrick drains his glass.
No. Where were you?
Where was Marcus?
He wasn't with Paul Allen.
Who was he with?
He was at Atlantis. With Craig McDermott, Frederick Dibble, Harry Newman, George Butner, and you.
Patrick's face glistens with a film of sweat.
All right, yeah, of course. It wanted Paul Allen to come, but he had made plans. And I guess I had dinner with Victoria the following night.
Personally, I think the guy went along nuts, so split town for a while. Maybe he did go to London, sightseeing, drinking, whatever. Anyway, I'm pretty sure he'll turn up sooner or later. I mean, to think that one of his friends killed him for no reason whatsoever would be too ridiculous. Isn't that right, Patrick?
A slow grin forms on Patrick's lips. That night, a limo cruises the wet streets in a rundown part of the city. Christy waits nervously at the curb as the limo turns the corner and pulls up in front of her. The window slides down.
Christy!
I'm not so sure about this. I had to go to emergency after last time.
This won't be anything like last time. I promise.
I don't think so.
Just come in the limo and talk to me for a minute.
Patrick flashes his money.
The driver's here. Be safe.
Christy edges toward the car. Reaching out, she takes Patrick's money. Patrick slides over, and she gets in beside him, uneasy. Patrick hands her his glass of whiskey.
Nothing like last time. Promise.
All right.
So you're looking great. Have you been?
Well, I actually might need a little surgery after last time.
Really?
My friend told me I should maybe even get a lawyer.
Lawyers are so complicated. I'll do that.
Patrick takes out his billfold.
Here's a check.
Christy takes the check and gets out of the car. The limo crawls along beside her. Patrick holds up his money. Christy glances over at the money, then looks away, then back. As she reaches for the money, Patrick pulls it away. He opens the door and slides back across the seat, holding his money clip as a lure. As Christy gets into the car, she reaches for the money.
Half now, half later.
Patrick reaches across her and closes the door.
Okay. My name's Christy. Meeting a friend of mine, Elizabeth. She'll be joining us in my new apartment shortly.
He hands Christy half the money.
You'll like her. She's a very nice girl.
At Paul Allen's apartment, Patrick removes drugs from a capsule.
You look really familiar. Did you go to Dalton? I think I met you at a surf bar, didn't I? It was spicy.
Patrick uses a spoon to pour the drugs into a bottle of wine.
Anyway, surf bar sucks now. It's terrible. Went to a birthday party there for Malcolm Forbes. Oh, my God, please.
This is nicer than your other apartment.
Patrick fills Christie's wine glass.
Oh, it's not that nice.
He pours a glass for Elizabeth, an attractive redhead.
Where did you two meet?
Oh, God. We met at, at the Kentucky Derby in 85. Or 86. You were hanging out with that bimbo Allison Poole. Hot number.
What do you mean? She was a hot number.
If you had a platinum card, she'd give you a blowjob. Listen, this girl worked at a tanning salon. Need I say more? What do you do?
She's my cousin.
Uh-huh.
She's from France.
Where's your phone? I've got to call Harley. Where do you summer? Southampton?
No.
Oh, God, it's his machine.
Elizabeth, it's 3 a.m.
He's a goddamn drug dealer. These are his peak hours.
Don't tell him you're here.
Why would I? This is weird. Harley, it's me. I need your services. Translate that however you want. I'm at...
You're Paul Allen's.
Who?
Paul Allen.
I want the number, idiot. Anyway, I'm at Paul Norman's, and I'll try you again later. And if I don't see you at Canal Bar tomorrow night, I'm gonna stick my hairdresser on you. Did you know that guy who disappeared? Didn't he work at Pearson Pierce? Was he a friend of yours?
No.
Do you have any coke? Or halcyon? Oof, I would take a halcyon.
Listen. I would just like to see the two of you get it on.
What's wrong with that? It's totally disease-free.
Patrick, you're a lunatic.
Come on. Did you find Christie attractive?
Let's not get lewd. I'm in no mood for a lewd conversation.
Come on. I think it'd be a turn-on.
Does he do this all the time?
Christie is sulking.
Christie, you're not drinking your wine. You're telling me you've never gotten it on with a girl?
No. Not a lesbian. Why would you think I would be into that?
Well, you went to Sarah Lawrence, for one thing.
Those are Sarah Lawrence guys, Patrick. You're making me feel weird.
Later, on the sofa, Christie lies on Elizabeth, caressing her body.
Did you know that Whitney Houston's debut LP, called simply Whitney Houston, had 4 number-one singles on it? Did you know that, Christie?
You actually listen to Whitney Houston? You own a Whitney Houston CD? More than one?
Elizabeth rolls off the sofa.
It's hard to choose a favorite among so many great tracks.
But the greatest love of all is one of the best, most powerful songs ever written. About self-preservation, dignity. Its universal message crosses all boundaries and instills one with the hope that it's not too late to better ourselves. Since, Elizabeth, it's impossible in this world we live in to empathize with others, we can always empathize with ourselves. It's an important message. Crucial, really. And it's beautifully stated on the album.
Later, beneath the sheets, Patrick still wears shoes as he thrusts into Elizabeth from behind. Christie rolls out from under the sheets. As she gets off the bed, Patrick's head slides between Elizabeth's thighs. Christie retrieves her clothes from beneath the bed. As she straightens up, she notices blood on the sheets. Elizabeth thrashes violently beneath the covers. Spotting the blood on Patrick's chin, Christie backs out of the bedroom and runs through the halls. She heads for a door at the end of a hall and opens it to find 2 dead bodies hanging in a closet. Christie slams the door and rushes into a room only to find the words "Die Yuppie Scum" painted on the walls and the room trashed. As she backs out of the room, Patrick enters the hall, naked and wielding a chainsaw. Christie rushes back into the room and out another door to the next hallway. throwing another door open. She trips into the bathroom and falls into the pool of blood oozing from Elizabeth's body. Patrick sinks his teeth into Christy's calf. She kicks him in the face, leaps to her feet, and opens another door.
You bitch, not the fucking face, you piece of bitch trash!
Christy runs through the living room, out of the apartment, and down the hall. She pounds on the door of the neighboring apartment. She runs to the next apartment. Then on down the hall. At the end of the hall, Christy races down the stairwell. Meanwhile, Patrick runs along the hall after her. Splattered with blood, he's still naked, except for his shoes. The stairwell spirals several floors down to the ground. Patrick holds the chainsaw over the railing, aimed at Christy like a gun. As Christy reaches the bottom of the stairs, Patrick releases the chainsaw. Patrick looks down at Christy lying motionless on the ground floor. The chainsaw protrudes from her body, and a river of blood flows from her corpse. Later, Patrick sketches a naked woman with a chainsaw buried in her back. Using a red pencil, he fills in the pool of blood around the body that's drawn on a white tablecloth. He hasn't touched his dessert.
I want a firm commitment.
I think, Evelyn, that, we've lost touch.
Why? What's wrong?
From across the room, a friend shows off her new bracelet to Evelyn.
My need to engage in homicidal behavior on a massive scale cannot be corrected, but I have no other way to fulfill my needs. We need to talk.
Talk about what, Patrick?
It's over, Evelyn. It's all over.
He carves an X through the drawing.
Touchy-touchy. I'm sorry I brought up the wedding. Let's just avoid the issue, all right? Now, are we having coffee?
Fucking serious. It's fucking over us. This is no joke. I don't think we should see each other anymore.
But your friends are my friends, and my friends are your friends. I really don't think it would work. You have a little something.
I know that your friends are my friends, and I've thought about that. You can have them.
Really serious, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
What about the past? Our past?
We never really shared one.
You're inhuman.
No, I'm in touch with humanity. Evelyn, I'm sorry. I just... you're not terribly important to me.
Oh, no!
A man at the next table glances over at them.
I know my behavior can be erratic sometimes.
What do you want me to do? What is it that you want?
If you really want to do something for me, then stop making this scene right now.
Oh, God, I can't do this.
I'm leaving. I've assessed the situation, and I'm going.
Where are you going?
Just leaving.
But where?
I have to return some videotapes.
As Patrick walks out of the restaurant, Evelyn dabs her tears with her napkin. Outside, Patrick steps off the sidewalk and crosses the street. Later, he walks along a colonnade and down a set of stairs. He pulls out his billfold, stops at an ATM, and inserts his banking card. There's a kitten at Patrick's feet.
Here, kitty, kitty.
Patrick bends and picks the kitten up. The ATM displays the message, "Feed me a stray cat." Patrick tries to stuff the kitten into a slot, then pulls out a gun and holds it to the kitten's head.
Oh my God, what are you doing? Stop that!
Patrick turns and shoots the woman in the chest. Then he releases the kitten. When a police car appears at the end of the colonnade, Patrick walks away. Out on the sidewalk, Patrick breaks into a run. At the curb, he tries the door of a Jaguar, a Mercedes, a BMW. He kicks a Porsche and runs into the street. Patrick darts up a side street. As he breaks out into the next intersection, police cars block the street.
Drop the weapon! Drop it now!
Patrick raises his arms, then fires at the cops. They return his fire, and Patrick ducks behind a car. One cop goes down. A gas tank explodes. A police car explodes in a towering ball of flame. A mushroom cloud of smoke billows up over the police cars, and Patrick looks at his gun in awe, then glances at his watch. Turning his back on the carnage, he walks away, then breaks into a run. Patrick pushes through a revolving door into the lobby of an office tower.
Burning the midnight oil, Mr. Smith? Hey, now don't forget to sign in.
Patrick pulls out his gun and shoots the security guard. As Patrick runs past a bank of elevators, a janitor appears. Patrick runs out another revolving door, then back in and shoots the janitor. Back outside, he runs into a courtyard and stops to get his bearings. Patrick runs into the lobby of another building in the complex. He approaches a security desk where a guard sits reading a newspaper. As Patrick reaches into his coat, the guard looks up and nods. Patrick brandishes a pen and bends to sign the security log. Then he walks away into a bank of elevators and into an empty car. Patrick sags against the wall of the car as the doors close. Upstairs, he strides along the darkened halls of Pierce & Pierce and into his office. Hurrying over to the window, he separates the Venetian blinds to peer out into the city. The glare of a helicopter searchlight catches him in the eyes, and Patrick scurries away from the window. Crouching in front of his desk, he reaches for the telephone and sits on the floor.
Howard, it's Bateman, Patrick Bateman. You're my lawyer, so I think you should know I've killed a lot of people. Some escort girls in an apartment uptown. Some homeless people, maybe 5 or 10. An NYU girl I met in Central Park. I left her in a parking lot behind some donut shop. I killed Bethany, my old girlfriend, with a nail gun. And some old faggot with a dog. Last week, I killed another girl with a chainsaw. I had to. She almost got away. And someone else there. I can't remember. Maybe a model, but she's dead too. And Paul Allen. I killed Paul Allen with an axe in the face. His body is dissolving in a bathtub in Hell's Kitchen. I don't want to leave anything out here. I guess I've killed maybe 20 people. Maybe 40. I have tapes of a lot of it. Some of the girls have seen the tapes. I even,
Patrick's face is wet with sweat and tears.
I ate some of their brains. And I tried to cook a little. Tonight, I just had to kill a lot of people! And I'm not sure I'm gonna get away with it this time. I guess I'm a pretty sick guy. So, if you get back tomorrow, I may show up at Harry's bar. So, you know, keep your eyes open.
Patrick runs his gloved fingers through his hair and leans back against his desk. Outside, the windows of Manhattan's office towers glimmer with light. The next day, there's a hazy sky over Manhattan. Sunlight pours through the vertical blinds into Patrick's immaculate living room. In the shower, he scrubs his back with a brush. He lets the stream of water rush over his face. Later, he steps into his walk-in closet to choose from among dozens of suits. Picking a suit, he carries it away. Later, wearing a navy cashmere overcoat and carrying his briefcase, he walks along the hallway in Paul Allen's building. Paul's door is ajar, and Patrick dons a painter's mask before entering the apartment. Glancing over his shoulder, he walks inside. Patrick leaves the door ajar and walks cautiously along a painter's drop cloth covering the hallway floor. He glances into the living room to find three people locked in conversation, the furniture gone and a drop cloth on the floor. Patrick steps into an intersecting hallway and walks toward the closet at the end. He stops to look into one of the bedrooms and finds it freshly painted and devoid of furniture. He opens the closet door to find the bodies gone. Painting supplies are stored in the closet now. Patrick stares at the closet in disbelief. He removes the mask from his face.
Are you my 2 o'clock?
It's one of the women from the living room.
No.
Can I help you?
I'm looking for Paul Allen's place. Doesn't he live here?
No, he doesn't.
You sure?
You saw the ad in the Times?
No. Yeah. I mean, yeah. In the Times.
There was no ad in the Times. I think you should go now.
But I think... I want to know what happened here.
Don't make any trouble, please. I suggest you go.
The woman eyes Patrick grimly as she steps to one side of the hall. Patrick eases past her on his way out.
Don't come back.
I won't. Don't worry.
In the main hall, Patrick backs to the door and out of the apartment. Later, in the street, he places his briefcase on top of a public telephone stand. Taking a pill bottle from his pocket, he pours the contents into his mouth. He chews the pills as he punches in a phone number.
Patrick Bateman's office.
Dean, I need help.
Patrick, is that you?
Dean, I'm not...
Craig McDermott called. He wants to meet you, David Van Patten, and Tim Bryce at Harry's for drinks. Patrick, I can't hear you.
What am I doing?
Where are you, Patrick? What's wrong?
I don't think I'm gonna make it, Gene, to the office this afternoon.
Why?
Just say no!
What is it, Patrick? Are you all right?
I'm sounding so fucking sad! Jesus!
She hangs up the phone, distressed. Out in the street, Patrick removes his overcoat. Grabbing his briefcase, he throws his coat to the ground and rips off his headset. Meanwhile, Jean walks around behind Patrick's desk and opens the top drawer. She glances up to see if anyone is watching her, then searches it. As she rummages through the second drawer, she finds Patrick's day book and takes it out. Jean opens the book. As she flips through the pages, she sits down in Patrick's chair and lays the book on his desk. The pages are dotted sparsely with appointments and a cartoon. Jean looks at them sadly. Meanwhile, Patrick clutches his briefcase to his chest as he peers through the louvered blinds in the window of Harry's bar. He straightens his tie, runs his fingers through his hair, and wipes his face on his jacket sleeve. Then he walks into Harry's.
It's table for three.
Eight men. You're looking a little wild-eyed, rough day at the
Bryce,
office.
B-R-Y-C-E.
Hey, look, Bryce is back, and he's drinking mineral water.
Yeah.
He's a changed man, except he still can't get a reservation to save his life. Why don't you just try 150 Wooster?
I'm not going anywhere unless we have a reservation.
Le Cirque, Flamingo East. Oyster Bar. Come on, faggots, let's get a res.
Patrick spots a man standing at the bar.
Need a reservation for 8:30.
Excuse me, gentlemen. Right back.
10 Wood would not be any good.
No.
Just fucking call them.
Patrick walks over to the bar.
I'll call you back.
Face it, the Japanese will own most of this country by the end of the 90s.
Shut up, Carnes. They will not. So, Harold, did you get my message?
Jesus, yes, that was hilarious. That was you, wasn't it?
Yeah, naturally.
Bateman killing Allen and the escort girls. That's fabulous. That's rich.
What exactly do you mean?
The message you left. By the way, Davis, how's Cynthia? You're still seeing her, right?
Wait, Harold. What do you mean?
Oh, excuse me, nothing. It's good to see you. Is that Edward Towers?
Harold starts to walk away, but Patrick stops him.
Davis, I'm not one to badmouth anyone. Your joke was amusing, but come on, man. You had one fatal flaw. Bateman is such a dork. Such a boring, spineless lightweight. Now, if you said Bryce or McDermott, otherwise it was amusing. Now, if you'll excuse me, I really must be going.
Wait, stop. I did it, Carnes. I killed him. I'm Patrick Bateman.
Patrick gazes pleadingly into Harold's eyes.
I chopped Alan's fucking head off. The whole message I left on your machine was true.
Excuse me. I really must be going now.
No, listen. Don't you know who I am? I'm not Davis. I'm Patrick Bateman. We talk on the phone all the time.
Harold stares coldly at him.
Don't you recognize me? You're my lawyer. Now, Carnes, listen. Listen very, very carefully. I killed Paul Allen. And I liked it. I can't make myself any clearer.
But that's simply not possible. And I don't find this funny anymore.
It never was supposed to be. Why isn't it possible?
It's just not.
Why not, you stupid bastard?
Because I had dinner with Paul Allen twice in London. Just 10 days ago.
No, you... didn't.
Now, if you'll excuse me.
Harold pushes past and walks across the bar, leaving Patrick totally confused. Meanwhile, Jean sits at Patrick's desk, paging through his daybook. On one page, she finds a drawing of a dismembered woman and a chainsaw. On the next, a woman crucified. Jean looks sorrowfully at the pages. They contain drawings of body parts and weapons, knives plunged into orifices, chisels and blades, disembodied breasts. On one page, a woman fillets a man. On another page, a woman's head floats in a toilet bowl. At Harry's...
We've seen the results of that mistrust in the form of lies, divisions, and mistakes. We need to find a way to cooperate.
Patrick rejoins his friends who are watching Ronald Reagan on CNN.
Can't be run by committee. And I believe there's now the growing sense that we can accomplish more by cooperating.
Patrick is shaken.
And in the end, this may be the eventual blessing in disguise to come out of the Iran-Contra mess.
How can he lie like
there
that?
There are now 17 months left in this administration.
How can he pull that shit?
What shit? Now, where do we have reservations at? I mean, I'm not really hungry, but I'd like to have reservations someplace.
How can you be so fucking, I don't know, cool about it?
Some guys are just born cool, I guess.
Patrick points at Van Patten.
Bateman? What are you so fucking zany about?
I'm just a happy camper. Rocking and a rolling.
Oh, brother, look. He presents himself as this harmless old codger, but inside...
Patrick looks at the TV.
But inside doesn't matter.
Inside, yes, inside. Believe it or not, Bryce, we're actually listening to you.
Come on, Bateman. What do you think?
Whatever.
His moronic idea was to order dry beers. I need a scotch.
Patrick raises his glass of scotch to his lips and drinks from it. The sounds of the bar fade from Patrick's ears as he looks over at Bryce, who laughs as he sips his drink.
There are no more barriers to cross. All I have in common with the uncontrollable and the insane, the vicious and the evil, all the mayhem I have caused and my utter indifference toward it, I have now surpassed. My pain is constant and sharp, and I do not hope for a better world for anyone. In fact, I want my pain to be inflicted on others. I want no one to escape. But even after admitting this, there is no catharsis. My punishment continues to elude me. And I gain no deeper knowledge of myself. No new knowledge can be extracted from my telling. This confession has meant nothing.
This described version of American Psycho was created by Audiovision Canada. The narrative description was written by Bill Williams, narrated by Valerie Hunter, and produced by Marco Sorin. For more information on other described movies and audio cinema presentations available from Audiovision Canada, call toll-free 1-800-567-6755. Cast: Patrick Bateman, Christian Bale. Timothy Bryce, Justin Theroux. Craig McDermott, Josh Lucas. David Van Patten, Bill Sage. Jean, Chloe Sevigny. Evelyn Williams, Reese Witherspoon. Courtney Rawlinson, Samantha Mathis. Louis Carruthers, Matt Ross. Paul Allen, Jared Leto. Donald Kimball, Willem Dafoe. Christy, Kara Seymour. Elizabeth, Guinevere Turner. Harold Carnes, Stephen Bover. Daisy, Monica Meyer. Homeless Man, Reg E. Caffey. Waiter Number 1, Blair Williams. Victoria, Marie Dane. Bar Girl, Kelly Herron. Mrs. Wolf, Patricia Gage. Sabrina, Krista Sutton. Man at Pearson Pierce, Landy Cannon. Stash, Park Bench. Vanden, Catherine Black. Dry Cleaner Woman, Margaret Ma. Hamilton, Tufford Kennedy. Humphrey Reinbach, Mark Pawson. Facialist, Jessica Lau. Maitre d', Lillette Williams. Waiter, Glenn Mark Silo. Libby, Charlotte Hunter. Karen, Kiki Boudignol. Woman at ATM, Joyce Corbin. Waiter Number 2, Reuben Thompson. Night Watchman, Brian Renfro. Man Outside Store, Ross Gibby. Young Woman, Christina McKay. Man in Stall, Alan McCullough. Marcus Halberstrom, Anthony Lemke. Gwendolyn Ichiban, Connie Chen. Costume Designer, Iris Mussenden. Production Designer, Gideon Ponte. Music Supervisors, Barry Cole and Christopher Covert. Music by John Cale. Editor, Andrew Marcus. Director of Photography, Andreas Shikula. Co-producers, Ernie Barbarash, Clifford Strait, Rob Weiss. A special thanks to Cheruti for the fine custom-made clothes. Line producer, Victoria Hurst. Location manager, Michael Bletcher. Set decorator, Jeanne Deville. Art director, Andrew Stern. Property master, Michael Fellows. Casting, Canada, Claire Walker. Casting Associates, U.S., Jennifer McNamara, Mark Bennett. Post-Production Supervisor, Philip Stillman. Post-Production Coordinator, Deanna Strong. Sound Editing by Tattersall Sound. Sound Design by CS Incorporated. Sound Designers, Ben Chia, Paul Urmson. Executive in Charge of Production, Lauren McLaughlin. New York Production Executive, David Daniels. Co-Producer, Alessandro Kamen. Pressman Production Executive, Gregory Wirtz. Muse Production Executive, Jordan Gertner, Timothy Wayne Paternal. Soundtrack album available exclusively on Koch Records. Orchestra conducted by Martin Goldray. Orchestration, Randall Wolf. Mixed by William Garrett. Solo piano, Eve Agoyan. Songs: True Faith, performed by New Order. Walking on Sunshine, performed by Katrina and the Waves. Simply Irresistible, performed by Robert Palmer. Paid in Full, Cold Cut Remix, performed by Eric B. and Rakim. Music for 18 Cents, performed by Sheldon Steiger. Sakril Nicht, performed by the Medieval Babes. I Touch Roses, performed by Book of Love. Ya Llegaron a la Luna, performed by Santiago Jimenez. Cuatro Milpas, performed by Francisco Gonzalez. Hip to Be Square, performed by Huey Lewis in the News. Lady in Red, performed by Chris DeBerg. Suicide, performed by John Cale. If You Don't Know Me By Now, performed by Simply Red. In Too Deep, performed by Genesis. Susudio, performed by Phil Collins. Pump Up the Volume, performed by Mars. What's on Your Mind, Pure Energy, performed by Information Society. Red Lights, performed by Curiosity Killed the Cat. The Greatest Love of All, performed by the London Philharmonic Orchestra. Try to Dismember, performed by MJ Minarski. Something in the Air, American Psycho Remix, performed by David Bowie. Who Feelin' It, Philip's Psycho Mix, performed by Tom Tom Club. Watching Me Fall, Underdog Remix, performed by The Cure. Trouble, performed by Daniel Ash. Copyright 2000 by Am Psycho Productions, Inc. Trouble is you.